Hello, this is Nancy Pippin with the Pantograph for Friday, February 21st, 2020. And we see it's going to be a sunny day, high of 37. So I can't throw off the coat just yet, but sunny days make for good days. Well, first of all, we're talking about health care in central Illinois, and we see a picture of Sherm Wilkerson holding an example of the world's smallest pacemaker. Now, he's holding this between two fingers, so it's approximately just about an inch in length, maybe a wee bit more, and then it has four prongs coming off of it and kind of curling back. So this smallest pacemaker, it was implanted in his heart at Advocate Bromine Medical Center in Normal after he developed atrial fibrillation. Wilkerson discussed the procedure in his home in Normal on Monday, and it says a pill-sized pacemaker implanted at Bromine. When Sherm Wilkerson found out he was the first person to have the world's smallest pacemaker implanted in Bloomington Normal, his heart didn't skip a beat. What mattered to him was that he could now walk without getting tired quickly, and that he recovered from his surgery without limitations, all thanks to a device that's about the size of a multivitamin and a cardiac electrophysiologist who is trained in its implantation. I didn't know at the time that I was the first in the area to have it implanted locally, Wilkerson, 79, of Normal, said. It was just circumstance, but those circumstances represent a medical advance for McLean County. The world's smallest pacemaker, or the transvenous pacemaker, is the Micarta transcatheter pacing system, also known as TIPS, and it's made by Medtronic. A traditional pacemaker is about the size of a matchbox and is implanted near the collarbone with wires or leads delivering electrical impulses to the heart. The Micarta TIPS is implanted directly into the heart with no leads, so it's sometimes referred to as a leaderless pacemaker. This is a good medical advance to benefit our patient population, said Dr. Senthil Sivalingam, the cardiac electrophysiologist who performs leaderless pacemaker implantation at Advocate Bromine Medical Center in Normal. I see it as a potential replacing the traditional pacemaker. While the leader, and then there is a picture of the doctor at Advocate displaying the size difference between the new leaderless pacemaker on the left and his traditional pacemaker that would be put in on the right, which has been used in the area for many years. And he spoke in the cardiac electrophysiology lab at Bromine, guess what, on Valentine's Day. Well, this article about the pacemaker continues on page A5, which we'll go to, and he says that while the leaderless pacemaker was first used several months ago at Bromine, the medical center is publicly discussing the healthcare advance this month in conjunction with the American Heart Month. When a person experiences slow or irregular heart rhythm, the heart is unable to pump enough oxygen-rich blood to the body, causing dizziness, fatigue, shortness of breath, or possibly fainting. Pacemakers help to restore heart rhythm and relieve symptoms by sending electrical impulses to the heart. Traditional generators have performed well over the years, said the doctor, but there has been a 1-2% complication rate, including things that could lead to fractures of fractures or occluding the lead veins or a blockage of the vein, valve damage, and a 0.5% infection risk. Doctor said that in addition, the generator needs to be replaced after about 8 to 10 years. So furthermore, heart pacemaker patients are advised following surgery to avoid lifting their arms above their head or on the side on which the pacemaker was implanted for 3 months. Now, the miniature pacemaker is inserted into the femoral vein at the groin and then guided through the vein to the heart using a catheter delivery system. Tines at the end of the device attached into the heart, and an electrode at the end of the device delivers electric impulses that pace the heart. The device was approved by the U.S. Federal Food and Drug Administration in April of 2016 and has performed well. Doctor said, because of the device's size and how it's implanted, there are no arm-raising restrictions. The leadless pacemaker has a 63% lower complication rate than the traditional pacemaker, and the infection rate much lower at 0.17% as opposed to 0.5%. The anticipated lifespan of this device is 12 years, and the leadless pacemaker is limited at this time to patients who need pacing of one chamber of the heart, the doctor said. Traditionally, for 15 to 20% of the people who need pacemakers, the single chamber pacing is enough. On January 20th, the FDA approved the device for certain patients who require dual chamber pacing, so its indication has expanded. And by summer, it should be available in the United States to 50 to 60% of patients who need a pacemaker. About 100 patients get pacemakers each year at Advocate Bromine and at OSF Health Care St. Joseph Medical Center in Bloomington, the doctor estimated. Sivalingam performed his first leadless pacemaker procedure at Bromine on September 30th and has performed only one other procedure using the new device so far. During that time frame, he and his Bromine colleagues implanted 15 to 20 traditional pacemakers. I picked patients at high risk of infection. I want my patients to benefit from new technology, but I want to make sure that safety profiles are met, he said. Both of my patients are doing well. Wilkerson had trouble breathing last June when he went to Bromine and was diagnosed with atrial fibrillation or irregular heart rate, specifically a slow heart rhythm. He was prescribed a blood thinner to reduce the risk of blood clots, and an electrocardioversion was performed to get his heart back in rhythm. When that didn't work, Svillingham told Wilkerson that he was a candidate for the wireless pacemaker. His wife Ruth had a traditional pacemaker implanted earlier in the year, and the pacemaker part of the procedure was fine. Wilkerson said, I have no physical limitations. I feel as good, if not better, than I did before the AFib happened. My stamina is much better. If you're a candidate for this, I would recommend it, Wilkerson said. I would expect more patients to benefit from this device, especially now with the expanded indication, Sivingham said. And then we have another little article here about tiny pacemakers offered in the area. It says, while implantation of the Micra transcatheter pacing system, also known as the world's smallest pacemaker, is new to Bloomington Normal. The device has been implanted at other central Illinois hospitals for a couple of years. A cardiac electrophysiologist has begun implanting the device in appropriate patients at Advocate Bromine Medical Center in Normal. When a patient at OSF Healthcare St. Joseph Medical Care Center in Bloomington are candidates for this leadless pacemaker, they are referred to OSF Hospital in Peoria and Urbana, where the procedure is performed, said the OSF Healthcare spokeswoman Libby Allison. Appointments before and after the procedure, often at OSF facilities in Bloomington, she said, and OSF Healthcare has offered Mycura since 2017. Methodist Medical Center in Peoria and the Carl Foundation Hospitals in Urbana also offer Mycura implantation. Decatur Memorial Hospital and HSHS St. Mary's Hospital, both in Decatur, refer appropriate patients to sister hospitals. Memorial Medical Center in Springfield has offered Mycura for a couple of years, spokesman Michael Leathers said. And HSHS St. John's Hospital in Springfield has provided the option since 2018, St. Mary's spokesman Andrew Delbeck said. And so that's a little more about this tiny pacemaker that looks like a pretty exciting advancement. And we continue now back on page one, and we'll talk about, let's see, we've talked about the pill size pacemaker. Do we have anything else here locally? No, so we will go back to the next top article, which is about the state budget and GOP hit school funding tax link. So this is what's going on here in the state. Out of Springfield, Republicans on Thursday called it shameful that Governor J.B. Pritzker is floating a budget plan that ties more than 40% of promised education funding to voter approval of his coveted tax structure overhaul. Educators agreed planning for the coming year would be difficult under the Democratic governor's proposal. It promises the expected minimum of $350 million to boost schools, but there's a catch. Classrooms would never see $150 million of it if a constitutional amendment to adopt a graduated income tax fails at the polls. This continues on page A2 to say he's trying to tell the state of Illinois, if you want to fund things that are important to you, then you have to go along with my political agenda. And I think that's a false choice. This is according to Assistant House Republican Leader Avery Bourne of Morrisville. He mentioned this in the Capitol News at a conference. He says it's a shameful tactic to use rather than talking about what we can afford to spend. The centerpiece of Pritzker's 2018 campaign, the income tax plan, would hit heftier incomes at a higher rate and provide $3.6 billion in additional annual revenue, according to advocates. This collection ramped up $1.4 billion would be available in the second half of the next fiscal year. That would be, which ends in 2021. That's the amount Pritzker has included in his budget plan as, quote, reserves that only materialize with the income tax switch, including the $150 million education funding carrot. That leaves school boards across the state wondering whether to anticipate spending based on a $200 million allocation or a roll of the dice and plan on the $350 million boost promised in a 2017 education funding revamp. Once budgets are set and students answer the bell, it's very difficult to adjust budgets. If additional revenues come in November or December, there's no time to develop any strategies to improve classroom instruction, said Tony Sanders, CEO of School District Number U46 in Elgin. The state's next to largest promise, another $150 million, you can't lower class sizes. You're talking about people, and you're not going, you're just not going to be able to hire people for a second half of a school year. Senator Andy Manner, a Bunker Hill Democrat who helped craft the 2017 evidence-based funding formula, said the schoolhouse apprehension is no different than any other year immediately following a gubernatorial budget unveiling. Manar said Pritzker made the case for a $350 million allotment, and there's multiple paths to get that done. Designed to prioritize state funding for neediest school districts in terms of academic achievement and the ability of local property wealth to provide financial support, the law sets $350 million as the minimal state contribution to make it work. But if it's lower, schools most in need still get an influx. One of the biggest advantages that we have today is we injected stability into the system, Manar said, but there's always going to be some doubts. From the time the governor presents a budget to the time one is signed into law, there's always going to be some level of uncertainty. Bourne argued there is enough revenue growth expected, $800 million, to cover the full education bill. Ben Schwarm, deputy executive director in the Illinois Association of School Boards, agreed that there's a lot of legislative debate to come before the General Assembly's May 31st schedule adjournment. And if lawmakers put $350 million in a budget bill they send to the governor, it would be very difficult for Pritzker to veto it. But approval of Pritzker's plan as it stands would ensure only $200 million for schools when the fiscal year begins July 1. School boards will react accordingly, Schwarm said. They'll go with what they think might be coming, Schwarm said, and they're prudent in the way that they do that, and they're going to go with the lower number. So, many thoughts there. And we'll go back to page one. And we have, let's see, one final article. And it's a U.S. government report that intelligence officers see Russia's role in the 2020 election. So this is very current and very important, even as we present it. So out of Washington, intelligence officials say Russia is still interfering with the 2020 election to try to help President Donald Trump get reelected, the New York Times reported Thursday. The Times said intelligence officers told lawmakers about the interference in a February 13th, so that's just about, what, a little more than a week ago, a closed-door briefing to the House Intelligence Committee. It said the disclosure angered Trump. He complained the Democrats would use the information against him. He berated outgoing director of National Intelligence, and this was Joseph McGuire, the next day. The Times attributed the report to five unidentified people familiar with the matter. The Associated Press could not immediately confirm the account. U.S. intelligence agencies say Russia interfered in the 2016 election through social media campaigns and stealing and distributing emails from Democratic accounts, Democratic Party accounts. They say Russia is trying to boost Trump's campaign and add chaos to the American political process. Special Counsel Robert Mueller concluded that Russian interference was sweeping and systematic, but he did not find a criminal conspiracy between Russia and the Trump campaign. Trump has doubted the findings of Russian interference. In the House briefing, Trump's allies concluded or challenged the National Defense Chief Election Official Shelby Pearson, who delivered the conclusion, saying Trump has been tough on Russia. The Times reported, but Trump has also spoken warmly of Russian leader Vladimir Putin and withdrawn troops from areas like Syria where Moscow could fill the vacuum. He delayed military aid last year to Ukraine, a Russian advisory decision that was at the core of his impeachment proceedings. The Times said Trump was angry at the White House briefing was made before the panel's chairman, which was Adam Schiff, who led the impeachment proceedings. Trump on Thursday formally appointed Richard Grenell, the U.S. ambassador to Germany and loyal supporter, to replace McGuire as the National Director of National Intelligence. McGuire was required to step down soon under federal law government acting appointees. The Times cited two administration officials as either saying the timing after the intelligence briefing was just coincidental. At an open hearing this month, FBI Director Christopher Wray told the House Judiciary Committee that Russia was engaged in information warfare heading into the November election, but that law enforcement had not seen efforts to target America's infrastructure, which would directly contradict the previous announcement of the 13th, February 13th. Mr. Wray said Russia is relying on a covert social media campaign to divide the American public and to sow discord. So, and above is a picture of Mr. Trump shaking hands with Vladimir Putin, and this was during a meeting in June 28th of 2019 in Japan of the G20. Now, intelligence officials say Russia is definitely interfering with the election and trying to help with the re-election of President Trump as of Thursday. And I believe that concludes our articles on page A1. So that's the beginning of our day here today, Friday, with the sunny skies and 37 degrees. We've talked about the pill-sized pacemaker, which is a pretty exciting advancement. And you can find out more about these stories on hashtag YBN on your computer. We also talked about the education and monies attached to the tax bill passage in the coming year. And then the national news is regarding the intel officials seeing Russia's role in the 2020 election. Let's move on now to page A2. And covered those articles, but you can't get by, just can't get by without Flick's Fact for the day. So here we go. Flick's Fact. Smoking cigarettes used to be a regular, quote, rite of college life. Is that still true? What do you think? Kids still, young people think that smoking is a big deal as to becoming in a pathway to college life? Well, Flick says hardly. These days at Illinois State University, it's even illegal to smoke on campus. It has been this way since July of 2015 and the passage of the Illinois Smoke-Free Campus Act. So bye-bye to all those tobacco products that we thought were so cool back in the day. And if looking back in the day, we see that this is the 52nd day of 2020. There are 314 days left in the year. And on this day, oh my goodness, February 21st, 1975, former Attorney General John N. Mitchell and former White House aide H.R. Haldeman and John D. Ehrlichman were sentenced to 2.5 to 8 years in prison for their roles in the Watergate cover-up. Each ended up serving approximately 1.5 years. And the thought for today is from our great statesman from the state of Illinois, Adelaide Stevenson. Says there's nothing more horrifying than stupidity in action. And so true. So let's look on and see what we have here. Locally, you might want to know that setting it right in. The other day we talked about different warehouses, and this was in regard to David Bentley said he no longer owns the warehouse at 216 East Grove Street that Dan Kelly previously considered for his sports and fitness business. Bentley owned the Devane Corporation and sold the property, which also goes by the address of 103 South Prairie Street, in August of 2018 to the 216 East Grove LLC, according to McLean County property records. So the owner was incorrect in the story that was presented on Thursday. So, well, looks like we are coming quickly to the end of our first half hour. And so we will return shortly with the second half hour of the pantograph. We'll take a short break, and I'll look forward to talking with you again soon. This has been Nancy Pippin with the pantograph for Friday, February 21st.